Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Criminal Connection podcast with me, Terry Stone, aka The Podfather. Today, we've got an extra special guest. He's called Marvellous Marvin Herbert, and he is a fucking Herbert. So please, put your hands together for Marvin Herbert.
Come on.
How you doing, mate?
Yep,
good to see you, brother.
Good pleasure being on, mate. Pleasure being on. Is it all right? It's The Codfather made me do
The Podfather, not Codfather. No, the Codfather does fish and chips.
There was a Codfather in Marbella.
I remember it.
The Podfather, I thought, oh, what a blinder. What a blinder. That's a good one.
Now, do you know what? Because the podcast is touching on true crime, and it's not just about enforcers, gangsters, actors that play criminals, authors. It's just about anything that's true crime related. So, because obviously The Godfather was... the head of the mafia family, you know, as a joke, someone said, "Oh, you're the Podfather," you know. So I've just embraced that now. So
I've got
to fucking get up there now.
You'll go there. Podfather.
So Marvin, right? You've had a crazy life, and I know you've done various podcasts, and you've been a man about town for probably the last four decades. But I think nobody has really got into who is the real Marvin Herbert. So what I'd love to do is deep diving, baby. And literally just find out, where was you brought up? Was you a London boy?
I was born up in London for, like, I'd say up to primary school. So reception, and then you start primary school, and then I was about 2 years into primary school, that's when we come to London. So I think the second or third year of primary school is when I come to London.
So how old was you when you was in London? Would you say like 7 or 8 years of age?
7 or 8 years of age, yeah.
So when did you, I mean, as a kid, did you sort of, you know, do martial arts? Did you go boxing? What was your...
Just from my memory, right? So when people say, what do you remember? I can remember being a kid, having a laugh, having a giggle, being playing in the park, picking up worms, eating worms, all that sort of... I've got vague memories of all that stuff when I was living in Liverpool, going around my nan and granddad's house, playing with my cousins, playing in the flat, playing around the field, doing all that sort of stuff. But once we come to London, the only memories I've got is running around Chalk Hill Estate, playing in the Caribbean environment, going to the Sunday school in Chalk Hill Estate, the Jubilee Centre, going down to Church Road, all that sort of, with my dad, and my dad used to do all the domino stuff. And then it was moving to Chalk Farm in Kentish Town that the life started. Like, my brain changed. Like, from that, it was when my dad burnt my hand.
Right.
When my dad burnt my hand, it was, that was the point where I actually knew that I'm going to be bad. I'm going to be everything my dad the opposite of what my dad was, and I've got to do everything I can. So I just went off into the big wild world.
When you say burnt your hand, what did he do? What was that about?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Well, growing up as a kid, we never really had much because my mum was a single parent mother, right? Basically, whose bloke was rumping everything in sight. My dad had kids with a million and one different women. My mum was a lot younger than my dad, so she's a little bit naive and immature.
Right.
But she had kids young. And my dad took her away from her family infrastructure in Liverpool and moved her to London. So she couldn't really cope with the four kids properly.
But your dad is a Londoner, right?
No, he's from Liverpool, Barbados, well. My dad. He's dead now.
Right.
And it's when she came to London and my dad was out doing things, she had to look after four kids and she couldn't really do the best job in the world. She'd done the best she could. I don't hate my mum, I love my mum more than anything. She's a soldier and she just got through everything she could get through. But we had to shoplift a lot as kids and nick a lot of food and do things that was unconventional. And my mum used to come out nicking with us. We used to do things with my mum. I know my dad used to sell puff and do all these things. Like, you just sort of know when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And then one day, I come out of school, we walked up the Queen's Crescent in Kentish Town, and then we went in Woolworths to nick some stuff. And then we're all nicking. I nicked a packet of spearmint gums
and
a Star Bar. And as we come out, the store detectives have caught us. And
I fucking love Star Bars. Yeah, they were a fucking chocolate bar, weren't
they? They were lovely. And I took that, and then walking out, store detectives copped us, said, "You're going to take us home." So in the back of my little mind, I was like, sweet, my mum nicks. My dad does that. At the time, you just know it's the smoke. My dad does that smoke that everyone buys, and you know my dad's crooked and we got to hide when the police come. You know, you sort of know he's no good. You know he's up to no good, right? And you got to keep your mouth shut when the police turn up. You can't talk when the police turn up. So you know there's bad stuff going on. So when I got caught, I just thought, when we go home, they'll make a show to the store detective and I'll be all right. I'll go in everywhere. What happened, you little divot? What'd you get? That's what you'd expect, right. Yeah? But then when they've sort of knocked on the door, I'm there with a little, my head's up in the sky, thinking, who's going to answer the door? My dad's come to the door. What is it? He said, oh, we're the store detective. We caught your son thieving. And then with that, my dad just sort of punched me in the face and grabbed, because I had a big afro then.
Right.
Or grabbed by the afro and just sort of slammed the door and then just dragged me down the hallway, dragged me into the kitchen, just put the fire on, just put my hand over it, mate, and just burnt my hand. And it was, I don't know sort of how to describe it, but I was just thinking, how can you burn my hand? You're my dad, I love you. Like, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Like, why are you burning my hand? Why? And I couldn't understand at that age why my dad would be doing it to me. And then just when I thought he'd stopped, he took his belt off, dragged me into the bathroom, threw me in the bath, and then just started beating me with the belt, then threw me in the bedroom. And then you're just thinking, what the fuck? Like, what? And then I started thinking, I hate you. I hate you, 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 I hate you. And then it was, I'm never gonna do nothing you want me to do. And then the thought pattern started then, and then I started watching things like The Sweeney, Police Five, and I was just watching things. That's what I'm gonna do. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna have all the money in the world, and then I'm gonna kill him. Fucking bastard, keep beating my mama, I'm gonna kill you. And that was what gave me my little bit of pill to go into the criminal fraternity with, about 8, 9 years of age.
So when you was watching these police shows, I thought for a minute you said you wanted to join the police force.
Before that, I did. When I was 4 or 5, I wanted to be a policeman and a fireman.
Right.
And then when my dad burnt my hand, man, I just wanted, after that, that's when I know it. That was the point. So I remember I actually wanted to be a policeman as a kid or a fire brigade man. Because I've always wanted to help people. That was the madness. I've always wanted to help people. And then when my dad burnt my hand, I just thought, I'm going to be like that gangster. I'm going to get all that money. I'm going to buy everyone everything. Fuck my dad. And that was the start of my criminal.
Did you ever have a chat with your dad about that, like later on in life?
Yeah, in the later years. Like,
what was he, did he say why he did it, or was he just?
Well, it was more about me more than him. Like, my dad was a very, I don't know about powerful force of death, but he had a powerful positive influence. And he was very, very powerful in certain environments. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that know my dad, no one speaks bad about my dad. And he done a lot of things for a lot of people in the cannabis world. And I just sort of try to understand how to ask him, how could you beat me like that? I mean, like, what made you do it? Like, and he said, sort of said, you know what? He just said, I just see the badness in your son. And I didn't want it to come out. And it's, looking back retrospectively, I kind of respect him for trying to beat it out of me, like.
It didn't work.
It never worked. But it just goes to show, right, that and I'm saying, my dad, my dad was 6'4". And he was a lump, mate. Like, my dad was in that world, like, you see my dad coming, he had his 3.5S Rover, white, he had all the rings, all the bracelets, all the chains, and he had all the silk suits, all the Crombies. Like, my dad was he was like a pimp. He was like,
I was gonna say, P-I-M-P.
Yeah, he was like that. He was just that way inclined. That's how he was. And then in later life, he went into all the dominoes and the gambling houses and things like that, but he grew up very ostentatious from the Caribbean community. He'd done a lot of parties in the black community, and I just couldn't understand. So I had to ask him, and he just told me that it was me. And I couldn't blame him for being me, because I knew how bad I was gonna be, if that makes sense. Like, I knew every fucking thing I'd done, and I was planning everything. Like, I'd do this to do that to do this, so you'd react so I could fucking come and do ya. Do you know what I mean? So I premeditated everything, and that's why I couldn't be involved in that world no more, because it's all premeditated bollocks that all the older people put in place to manipulate the younger people, so they all end up fucked, dead, in prison, traumatised, and they all live the life of Riley, giving it a big one in their yacht somewhere, saying, oh, you never guess what happened to that cunt. You never guess what happened to that cunt. You never guess what. Yeah, you never guess what happened. Yeah. And that's all they do. Yeah, you never guess what happened to that cunt. Well, what happened? Bosh. How'd that happen? Oh, you know such and such. He done such and such. Who had time to do with that? Well, such and such and such and such done that. Fucking joke, innit? And it's never ending. They're all throwing each other under buses and they don't stop. And then when the big boys get nicked, they're the ones that go, well, I can't go to prison. I've got too much responsibilities. What have I got to do to stay out of prison? They say, well, throw a few people under the bus. And so they throw them under the bus. And they throw them under the bus. And they throw them under the bus. Now, I'm not going to start throwing paperwork about, but there is paperwork about on some prolific villains, because we've had a lot of PIIs done. public community interest hearings. People don't know about that. And you can get information on that. It's all freedom of information. Freedom of information, yeah, that you can go and get after 25 years of any crime. You can see all the snitches, mate. Yeah. Think about that.
That's scary. For anyone who's been crossing, it's scary.
Yeah, because it's all got to be freedom of information. They've got to release it after 25 years and they hold it. Don't hold it forever. Wow. I mean, they've got to release it. It gets released into the public domain. So there's a little chip for you.
Yeah.
You can go and have a little snoo about that. Because it has to do it. Like, when they're real deep, it's all blacked out. It's all blacked out. Because they don't want them informers known. Because there's deep-rooted informers in the game now. There's one of them actually in prison right now under an alias. Wow. Yeah, and there's a little bit of a sting going about it. This kid's going to bring down a criminal fraternity. Wow. So I've heard. Don't know how much truth's in it, but apparently he's called for a listener and he spoke to a listener and apparently he's going to blow the lid on a lot of things. And a lot of people that he's in connected to are very powerful. And some of them was even connected to a case I was arrested for 19 murders. Wow. And imagine this, right? So this
Marvin, you didn't kill 19 people, sure.
No, see what I'm saying to you, right? So this is what happened, right? So
honestly, that's a long night's
this
work.
This is what happens. So all them villains, the people at the top, yeah, what they do is, yeah, they have relationships with old Bill. And then they fit everyone up. We got fitted up, right? And literally, they put my DNA on a crash helmet, my DNA on gloves, and down the wires on a bike, and then put the bike in a lockup with loads of guns and loads of other things, and then put us down to 19 murders. And then the people that were supposed to be looking after my friends, yeah, was working with the police. And we got the PII, the person, I won't mention his name, he gave the police, he said in the PII, blah, blah, had knowledge of the lockup shortly before the raid. Blah, blah, gave the police the address of the location shortly before the raid. Black and white. And we've read it. Fortunately enough for the man, he's dead now, so I won't talk to the dead. But this is something that's been going on forever. So I can honestly say that I've met numerous people on numerous occasions when I've been under investigation and they've tried to give me products and money in broad daylight when I'm under robbo. And they're never nicked. They're never collared. I got nicked for 19 murders and no one above my pay grade got their collar felt.
Wow.
How can that work? How could you be a known associate of me, yeah, get arrested for murders, and you're with me every other day, and you don't get your collar felt? How can that happen?
I'm getting worried now that I'm going to get my collar felt. I've only just been talking to you for 20 minutes.
No, but it's the world, though. It's
you were
world.
One of Marvin's associates. You talked to him on the podcast. See, and that's were you involved?
Nuts, mate. And they all throw their youngsters under the buses. They all do it. They've got to do it to survive. Look, I got drove mad in that criminal fraternity. By old Bill, I got drove mad, mate. And everybody I know in that game gets drove mad. How could you be like a public figure and not go shovel for 20, 30 years?
Right.
How? It's not possible.
I mean, you had this traumatic experience with your father. And obviously it's made you fucking hate him and you've then gone into this like crime stuff, right? What was your... I mean, you said that you used to do shoplifting and obviously you probably did a bit of street stuff, but when would you say that you went from doing like minor stuff?
I can tell you. It's all step by step because there was all mugs. Everyone I worked with was a mug and I was thinking, oh, these are mugs, mate. What are you doing that for? What are you doing this for? Do this, do that, do that. Oh, you lot are mugs, man. I just carried on. Like, just, I'm not saying everyone I come across is a mug. What I'm just saying is I couldn't see you're not going to make money out of that. You're not going to make money out of that. You're not going to get millions out of this. You're not going to get millions out. And I was just looking for the millions. Do you know what I mean? And when I got into the armed robberies, this is what happened. I got into the armed robberies, right? And then I noticed, because I was away with all the armed robbers in...
Was the armed robbery, that was when you went in at serious crime?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
that was the
yeah,
beginning.
Yeah.
How old was you then, Marv?
19.
Wow.
Yeah, 19, with all the East London lot.
Right.
I'm not saying he got me into it, but the person I followed was a guy called Lenny Sandiford. He was a formidable character back in the day. I don't really know what's happening with him of late because I haven't spoken to him for decades. But I haven't been around him for decades. Right. You know what I'm saying? But they're not in the best place they could be. And they could be in a lot better place than they are. But he actually set me off on a journey that I'm grateful for because they taught me the infrastructure of how to survive and how to survive with the right people. Although we was all doing bad things, we was all good people. And
I mean, for our listeners and viewers, right? An armed robbery on a fucking money van, right? Now is sort of unheard of, obviously, because of the way things are and the CCTV and whatever. But back then, obviously, there was no CCTV. And that was the thing, wasn't it? You know, you went out and you robbed a couple of Securicorp vans, right? But I mean, what sort of money would you get out of them?
See, again, this is what I was saying to you, right? So when I got into the vans with Lenny and all them, like, I'm doing all the bits and bobs, right? What I noticed very rapidly is that once you went over £1 million, you got nicked. Everyone got nicked. And they went heavy for over £1 million. And I always wanted £5 million to exit the game. That's always the rule. If I get £5 million, I'll be out, right? So I'm always looking for a £5 million, £2 million, £3 million bit to work. I always look for it. And when I noticed that the armed robberies go nuts for over £1 million, once you hit over £1 million, there's another investigation. So then I thought, well, hold on. What can we do? So then I thought, we do work under £1 million and then we stack our money and invest our money into other businesses and other companies, then we can get out of this bollocks. So we set off on a journey, and then once we started making money, the team members I was connected to didn't want to amalgamate their money, didn't want to put things together, didn't want to go legit, didn't want to go straight. So things fell apart quickly. So you had to move and box and weave. And then in 97, I went to Ibiza. I'm in partying in Ibiza, and I say it now because I'm not embarrassed, but I was over there on American Express Black Card, unlimited authorization, yeah. So I've got it, and it's clearing, and I'm giving it the absolute big one. Yeah?
So you actually got one of them cards?
I had one, yeah.
Marvin was a Centurion member.
So I'm saying, right? Yeah, a lot of people don't know. I never had the card. What I've done, I bought the card.
Right.
So the card was crooked. Yeah. Right? But I'll tell you, we bought them £5,000. I promise you. I'll shit you not, mate, yeah? Young Indian Jack used to get them for us, right? So that's what I'm saying. So you know the benefits. So an American Express Black Card, right, is a card with unlimited authorization without a code 10. So you go like that, and it's authorized. Done. Not a question. £100,000, £200,000, £300,000, £500,000, it authorizes. You know that, right? Sick. So I'm in IB for giving it the absolute big one in 97, right? Now what?
Champagne, please.
That's what happened. So I'll go. I weren't even going to go. And Indian Jack said to me, he said, Marv, come and everyone's going, come. I said, I can't. I've got no money. I'm going to need a couple of grand and blah, blah, blah. We ain't going to work till next week. This is the work. This is Bobby and Steve from the Zoo Experience on Kiss FM. They was all out there, right? And Rampling, everyone that was the DJs at the time was out there. Yeah, they said, Marv, come on, man. I was like, I ain't got the money. He said, Marv, but I'll get you a card. I said, what do you mean? He said, I'll give you a card, £5. I was like, what am I going to do with that? He said, I'll get you that. He said, Marv, it'll give you unlimited authorization for as long as you're there, mate. He said, don't even worry about it. Just keep it. When you come, £5, I said, shut up. He said, look, you got to keep it till it blows up. When it blows up, you ain't bother. Right? So I was like, yeah. He went, yeah. I said, all right. So he said, I'll tell you what to do. Take the card and pay me when you come back. If it don't work, don't pay me. So I went, all right. So
that's an offer you couldn't refuse.
Yeah, I couldn't refuse. So off to IB before I go with old Shug. And I'll give you a prop, Shug, right, of my pal Dave. DT in the building took me over to IB. So I drove over there in his 328 BMW. Right, convertible. We've got this American Express back card, so goes over, goes into the first club, couple of bottles of champagne, not a problem. Couple of bottles of Dom P, not a problem. Dom Perignon, by the way, DP. So another couple of bottles, sweet. So I said, can I get 5 bottles? Can you send them 5 bottles? Can you send them 5 bottles? And it's all authorising. So all of a sudden, like, I'm the man now. Nah. I'm just giving it bigger. The few boys are sitting next to me drinking my way, yeah. So I said, no, love, come here. I said, do me a favour, can you send them 5 bottles of Dom P, please? Yeah? And them, yeah. The people said, what are you doing, bro? I said, bro, no disrespect, yeah.
That's
said,
why they call him Marvellous Marvin.
Yeah. I said, no disrespect, mate, yeah. I said, but you're sitting next to me, we're giving it a bigger, mate. We are giving it a bigger, and I don't want to mug you off, so you may as well join us, mate. Have another 5. And I was just buying everybody 5, 10 bottles of Dom P. And that went on for 4.5 days, right? Everywhere. I sent people home on Concord, like, you know, just giving it the absolute biggest. The card weren't blowing up. It weren't blowing up. And then I left it with, I'll try and find out what DJ it was I left it with. But I left it with a DJ. Then he told me he'd done 170 grand on the card and then left the card there. know what I'm saying? So the card was still running when we left it there, and it was just giving it a big one. And anyway, back to the story, right? So I'm giving it a big one with this card. I'm in space one afternoon, right? Out of my nut.
Great club, that was.
Oh, mate, it was the gaff. And when the airplanes come over and everyone cheers, mate, it's sick. So I'm in there, buzzing, giving it a big one, all of a sudden. So some little Rockefeller said, ah, you want some hats? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's come with this pollen, right? And it was the caramel, the bubbly one. So it bubbles up, it was really good. I was like, ah, oh, this is sick, 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 sick. And I was like, ah, oh, how much can you get? And he goes, lumps a bit. So then, after a couple of days we're partying with this fellow, or a day, it might have been another night and then another day in space, and then we started talking. He said to me, you do the fours? I said, what's the fours? Because I'd just come out of jail, 97. I didn't realise what the fours was, the terminology for the soap bar puff, right? So I said, fours, what's the four? He said, hashish. I was like, yeah, of course I do. I love that at home. So we started talking, and he said, I can get it to you. I said, yeah, how much? And he said, 165, but I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, what are you on about? He said, 165. I said, for what? And I thought he was going to bring a little bit of puff. And he said, per kilo. I was like, say that again? You'll get me a Kia puff for £165, mate. He was like, yeah. He said, but you got to come to Spain. So I mean, you pay for it in Spain. And I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah. I said, shut up. He said, yeah. I said, so how much is a ton? He said, £165,000. I said, piss off. He said, see? I was like, fuck off. He said, see? And then he broke it down to me that it cost no more than £100 a kilo in Morocco.
Right.
They paid 40 grand to get it to Spain. His mate will nick a drink, and then you got to pay the transport home. So it comes 165 grand landed in Spain, and you got to pay your transport home. So all in total, it used to come to 205 grand, roughly.
And what was that worth puff on the street?
Wow. At that time, you'd get, I think it was 1750 or 1550. That's £1,750 or £1,500 a kilo. But you're buying a kilo for £165. So I mean, then you transport fees home. So I said, yeah? He was like, yeah. I said, piss off. He said, I'm serious. I said, I'm serious. I'm like, fuck off. I'm serious. I said, don't make me come to Spain, you know, and there's going to be a fucking problem, man. I'll come, you know. Are you being serious? He said, all that bollocks. And I was like, oh, that's right. So obviously, he'd come home, went to work, nicked a bit of Reddy's. And then,
what would you make on that though? So if you were paying 165 for a kilo,
yeah,
what would you sell it for?
500.
Fucking hell!
Straight, just sell it for 500 straight away, no headaches.
And that's not the street value. That's the
wholesale.
Flipping it on.
Yeah,
so the street value, what would that be? A million or more?
Yeah, it depends on the person who's selling it. Sometimes at the time, if the puff was 1550, then you're giving them it to for 500 or 750. Then they're going out between 750 and 1500, isn't it? That's how it all works. A kilo of cocaine is only 7 grand at source.
Right.
They sell it for 30, 40 grand on the street. So I'm saying it's all a get up. After 600 kilos of sold cocaine in Europe, you've got 400 dispensable kilos of cocaine to bring to England. And there's so many gang crime, violence, and bollocks. That's why I'm out of it. It's all bollocks. It's all a get up. And all the people with it are using the youngsters to make more money than they've seen since. But they want, it's like the older lot want the younger lot to have stabbings and shootings, and they want them to kill. It's like they're feeding their egos. There's literally a handful, literally five people that I would trust with my life from that world, literally in the whole existence. Do you know what I mean? The one person that made me go legit in everything I've ever done was Daniel Kinahan. Imagine that. The most straightest person I've ever met, ironically. And he was the one who sort of educate me on businesses and business systems and looking after your family. Without him, I would always believe that all the criminal fraternity loved me. He said, they don't love you, man. They're using you. You're a benefit. I was like, what? Nah, my pals. And then in time, things happened. I thought, wow. Wow. Now, this is deep. He said, mate, come on. And yeah, me and Daniel have been through some stuff. And at times, when I could have ruined everything. I could have ruined everything for me, my kids and everything. He just sort of stood beside me and said, Marv, just do the right thing. This is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do. You've got kids to think about. Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, I really wanted to kill the geezer that shot me.
Before we get on to that, you've done the armed robberies. Yeah. You've gone to Ibiza. You met this guy. You're now bringing the puff in, right? Yeah. What happened after that?
Basically, everything in my world was sweet at that point.
Did you know Daniel then? Or was this later?
No, I only met Daniel in 2006.
Right.
So, I mean, we became really close friends after 2006.
Puff and Ibiza was 97, 98.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with anything in my bad. What I've done in my bad, this is what made me get to, when we were talking about the stepping stones, right?
Yeah.
So basically, because I used to rob money, yeah? This is how I got into Puff, right? I used to rob money. So I couldn't put money in safety deposits or boxes or banks. I couldn't get you to look after my money because you'd spend it or someone would rob you. So I had to find ways to put my money into the bank. So the only way to secure my money was to sort of buy drugs, then give it to people cheaper than they could ever get it. So my money was in the bank.
He was like the Tesco's of the drug world. He was buying it cheap and then selling it.
Just giving it. But that's another thing as well. I never really sold it to make a profit. Right. Even some of my mates in the game said, what are you actually doing it for? For them, isn't it? For them to get in front. Like, are you off your head? No. Like, that's what I do it for. I'm not doing it to earn money out of them. I'm doing it so they can earn money. So I'm not going to give it to them where they're going to struggle or suffer or get in problems. And then it weren't until 2014 that I realised the ripple effects of doing all that stuff. So I mean, that's what made me come out of it all. But yeah, I used the drug world as a way to compartmentalise my cash growing up as a kid. And then I just went up the levels to the top. And when I got to the top, I just thought, well, do you know what? I don't really want to live like that for the rest of my life. And I really don't want to live like that for the rest of my life. And if this is what you call cracking it, then I'd rather go and get a job. So I'm going to go and do what I can do with it.
After the puff, then did you get involved in other stuff as well? So you started doing coke and...
Mate, I was involved in everything. Right, this is why Marv was marvellous. Like, I'm not saying it to be begetted, but it wasn't anything I'd ever done. I was like a conduit to the criminal fraternity. And anyone will tell you, like, Marv was different. I mean, I'm not out there trying to pretend I was hard or gas. I'm like, if you come and have a row, I'll have a row with anyone. I'm not scared of anyone. If anyone wants to have a row now, I'll have a row with anyone. I'm not scared to test my ability. That's all I do, test how good I am. Now, if you beat me up, then you're shit up, and I'll give you your credit. Wicked, I never thought I'd get beaten up. I never thought you'd do me, but fuck me, well done, bruv, lovely. I'm that kind of guy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I only want to test my abilities, how good I am. So in the gym, boxing, weights, circuits, all that, I'll just challenge myself. And I haven't met anybody yet that's outdone me, outworked me, outbeat me. So I just do what I do. I'm not professing to be the best at everything, but I do circuits and I do boxing. And I've never gotten in the ring yet with anybody that I don't feel that I can be in the ring with. And I've been in the ring with some world champions. I mean, literally. Like, and I've had some good spars with some good people. And I keep myself in a physical position. I've still got my six-pack. So, I mean, I'm still ripped like a racehorse.
I've been saving up for one of them. I've actually put it on my Christmas list.
You need to come train. You need to do a boot camp with me for 6 weeks.
I'll be crying.
Call it on, mate. Come on, we'll get you super fit. Get Terry Turbo back shape, mate.
I'm on it.
Let me get you on it proper. Go public and say you'll get on a little... Come do a circuit. Do 6 week circuit training with me. And what it is, it'll be... You can be... Because I'm creating a new...
I could be your model, couldn't I?
No, what is it? We're creating a spectrum. It's a spectrum of fitness.
My wife says I'm on the spectrum.
Yeah. It's where we can place you. I mean, the missus is on it. She's got the female arm. I mean, I've got a young blind kid on it. I've got a young... He was 21 stone, now he's 16 stone. He's on it. Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to get another not as able-bodied person. I don't like calling people disabled, but not as able-bodied as everybody else, but much more functional and like wants it. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, we're on it, man. Personal training, everything. Everything.
So you've gone through this, you know, this drugs thing. You become Marvellous Marvin, the chemist of London.
I wouldn't even say that. It was just more about giving people what they needed so everybody could nick a few quid. And if anybody come to me and said, Marv, do you know anybody who's got this? Do you know anybody who's got that? I'd more than say, well, I'll ring
someone. She was more like a fixer, like yeah, people wanted something, you look them up.
And, I've got everything for everyone. The only thing I wouldn't get, and this is a fact, the only thing I wouldn't get for other people was guns.
Right.
I wouldn't get guns for other people because I was involved in something late 80s, early 90s, and I realised that you can get killed by your own gun. Do you know what I mean? And it don't make sense giving other people things that can kill you or your friends. So anything that killed people, I never got for no one.
Got it.
And I just stayed away from that arm. But it was alleged I was up to all sorts of shooting, stabbings and killings when I was a young man. However, I can honestly say I physically never killed anyone. And I can honestly say that. Now, the universe takes people in many different ways. And the universe saves people in others. So I can't be responsible for what the universe gives or takes. And I'm a living example of that, because I should be dead. I mean, look, come close, look.
I can see that.
Look, but halfway through my eye.
Wow.
Look, if you look in.
Yeah.
You can see my retina.
Yeah, I can see it.
It moves, I've still got my retina. Still got my retina.
I'm looking to that camera, show the audience, that is fucking scary shit.
Yeah.
And that was you. That was when you were shot in the eye.
I got shot. It went through there. If you can see the little lump there, it went through there, and into the eye. Then look, it stopped halfway through. Literally halfway through. Right now, I'll show you something now.
I mean, that was fucking divine intervention.
No, mate, beyond belief. I'll show the X-rays. I've got the X-rays right now. The bullet that went through my femur.
So they shot, it was more than one shot.
Five shots I got, man. Right, so he shot me in, my leg. So he pulled the gun out, and I've got to try and grab the gun, right? So he shot me in the first bit here, which has shattered my leg, and my leg's just shattered, so I've hit the deck. As I've hit the deck, I've tried to get up. As I've tried to get up, he shot me. He went through the arm, off the pelvis, through the pelvis, and then out my two vertebrae at the spine. I'll show the scars after. And then, as I've gone back again, I've tried to get up again, and he shot me, but it went down my wheelie and out of my right testicle.
Fucking
yeah? And then I thought,
Getting shot in the bollocks or the testicles or the penis doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, you don't really feel none of it. It wasn't until I've looked, because I never felt it. I just see.
You go, oh, my penis, I'm shot my penis.
It's just like, and I thought, did he just shoot me there? And as I've gone like that, that's when I've seen my knobble burst open.
Fucking hell.
And I thought, you can't lay down, you've got to get up. And then I just thought, as I've come up like that, I just see him coming down with a gun like that, and I've just sort of looked down the barrel, and then bang, the first one come down and it hit me, and I thought, did he just shoot me in my head? And I thought, I'm alive, he couldn't have done. But I've got to get up again, and I've looked up, and I've just seen the bullet come again in my eye. And honestly and truthfully, it was like someone punched me. And then I heard him running off, and I thought, what the fuck did he just shoot me with? Do you know what I mean? And
was it a 9mm or was it a 2mm?
Yeah,
a 9mm
Glock. Yeah, you feel the bullet hole. Right. Here's your finger. Look, feel the bullet hole, look.
Fucking hell.
That's a 9mm, bro. And wow. I've got the bullet holes in my leg as well, and the arm. Like, it was a 9mm. That's what I'm saying. At first, I thought, what did he shoot me with? Because I've been involved in things, I've seen some bad things. I'm saying, so I'm thinking, what did he do me with? Is it in my eye? Why am I? And it was just numb. It was all numb. And I got someone to get the phone out of my car. I made a couple of phone calls. And then I actually thought I was going to go into shock and pass out. I mean, so I've rung my mates to tell him who it was who'd done what he'd done. And then the ambulance come. Well, no, I rung the ambulance, and then the ambulance come, and I went to hospital. Yeah, it was a bit of a nutty one.
What was it over the shooting? Did you ever fall out with a fellow, or was it...
He was a cheeky little squeak, to be fair. Basically, I took him round my mate's house one afternoon, and my mate had a parcel of watches. He took one of the watches. A couple of weeks later, he hadn't paid for the watch. The person that owned the watch rung me up and said, Marv, you going to pay for the watch? I said, and he paid for it. He went, no. I said, fucking squeak. So go and pay for the watch. He said, what's it got to do with you? I was like, what? What do you mean, what's it got to do with me? I said, what's he going to do? You're on the bully up, ain't ya? But he's sitting in company with a load of people. Do you know what I mean? Bully up. I said, I'll show you bully up, cunt. Where are you? He said, I'm down the port. So I said, all right, sweet. So I went
down the port. This is in Marbella?
Port of Benoche, yeah.
Right, so what year was this?
2008.
Right.
August the 24th, 2008. Yeah. Just after I see Colton. Right. I see Colton. Oh, that's another story. See Colton in outside Sinatra's. Yeah. Because I was going to do Colton as well. I was going to do him because he chopped me up as a kid. And that was the first time I saw him after he chopped me up on the door of the ministry.
So what happened there?
What, with Colton?
Yeah. I thought, let's finish the shooting thing, because, so the guy's called you, right? He said, I'm in the fucking port.
No, I've called him, what are you going to pay for the watch?
And he's gone, come down to the port.
No, he never said that. He said, what are you talking about? What are you bullying me for? I said, bullying you for what? I said, you need to pay for this fucking watch. I was going to come punch you in, mate. If I punch you in, you can keep the watch, you little squeak. I said, where are you? He said, I'm down the port. I said, all right, sweet. So I've jumped in the car. I give him my tool. I had a 357 snub nose as well. That was my tool.
You were
tool.
Like fucking Dirty Harry, weren't you?
That was my tool. But I left it with my nephew. I said, hold that. I'll be back in a minute, little squeak. I went down there, and then I never thought he'd do it. He went like that. I said, what's that? What are you going to do with that, you little squeak? And as he pulled out, it went crash, crash, crash. Yeah. And that was the beginning of my transition, I believe. Because it was after that that I met Daniel, and it was then getting through everything I went through that we started MTK.
Right.
And then we just grew like family members.
But before we get onto MTK and Daniel Kinnan, let's talk about the Carlton thing. So he was at Ministry of Sound.
Rewind.
I'm just really interested. Yeah, we were going to come again, my selector.
Yeah. Well.
So you went to Ministry of Sound.
Yeah, so you can verify this. Do you remember MC Creed?
Yeah, of course.
Right, so Creed and his brother. Right, so Creed's brother got cut on the side of the head in this altercation because he was there. When someone's gone to hit me, they've hit him by accident and split his head open. When that was when I was having a rat. I'm going to mention it because he tried to make out he weren't there. So... Kung Fu Dave Gold. Dave Gold was there. Colton, Dean, and I don't know the names of the other three people, but there was another three people.
Right.
What's happened? I'm in the ministry. And obviously, them days there, I was having it with some of the most prolific armed robbers of its time. Right, that done what they'd done. And they was connected to a lot of people in the drugs game. I was only 19, 20, if that, right? Yeah, and basically I was in awe of all these gangsters because I wanted to be one of the boys, yeah? So when I started hanging with all these gangsters, when we started going to the ministry, I'm walking behind them. But they're walking up to the ministry with, and you weren't allowed to drink alcohol in the ministry at this time, yeah, but these guys was coming to the ministry with crates of champagne. Right, I'll shit you not. Right, so as they were all going up, Lenny, Linville, Jack, yeah, it was they're the three main ones that I went with. Do you know what I'm saying? Basically, walked up to the door, walk in, security come, crash, all walk in. Not a bother. Get a plot, got a bother. Sniff, drink, smoke, do what we wanted. I was like, how come you lot got it like this? Like, with us, mate. Yeah, sweet. So then I started going to the ministry regular. So I'm turning up in the ministry with 5-10 people. Yo, Carl, what's happening? And he'd open the gate and I'd walk in. Not a problem. And we was all pals. Everyone was friends, everyone was nice. I was a 19-year-old little whippersnapper, but I was lemon. I was fucking feisty, mate. So I was talled up, innit? So I didn't care, I'd chew anyone. So I was in that moment, all the gangsters loved me, so I was like a little golden child. So anyway. I had a 14 carat Bulova watch. It was one of the first ever gold watches made by Bulova in America, right? So I had this watch and I loved it. So I'm in the toilet out of my nut. The kid's gone to me, have you got the time, mate? So I've gone like that, not thinking anything of it. The kid's trying to take the watch off me. So when he's trying to do that, Because I just got my blade out and just started plunging him up, yeah? I thought, what are you doing, you stupid cunt? Get off me. And with that, his mates come running over, so I've done him. Do you know what I mean? So as I'm coming out of the toilet, I've been told, I'm not sure who it was because I was out of my nut, but I've rung him and I asked him if he had a scar on his belly, and he said he did. And I said, where did you get it? And I think, I can't remember if he confirmed it was there or not, but he said he's definitely got it there. I said, well, I was supposed to have stabbed him. So Bernard O'Mahony, I was supposed to have stabbed him in the belly, yeah, and then gone on to the dance floor.
This was at the Ministry?
In the Ministry of Sound, yeah. So then basically what's happened, I don't know whether or not it was the two people in the toilet that got stabbed up or Bernard O'Mahony, but when Colton heard that I'd done this in the club, he'd popped a lid. Do you know what I mean? So I'm on the dance floor and young Fitz has come in and called me out. I said, what's the matter? He said, Colton wants you. I said, for what? He said, he needs to speak to you about something. I said, I'll tell him I'll speak to him after, man. Because when I've come out of the toilet, I've said to the bouncer, whether it's Bernard O or not, I said, look, someone's just been served up in the toilet. And I went to give him the blade as if to say, there's the blade. And he's half trying to grab hold of me, like, what are you doing with that? And I was like, what are you talking about? I didn't want to say I'm with Colton, but I'm like, what are you doing, you div? Let go of me. And he's like, ugh. That's what happened. He's manhandling me, so I plunged him up, put him down, and carried on walking, gone into my firm, and then we're standing there, the next thing, Fitz has come in, he said, Marv Colton wants you. I said, for what? Tell him to come up here. He said, no, he wants to speak to you now, it's urgent. I was like, for what? He said, Marv, it's really urgent. So I went, all right, sweet. Because I thought we was all one firm, we could do what we wanted with everyone. There was all the ICF fucking football thugs and West Ham and all that bollocks. So I thought, you can stab people, be what you're doing, and you just have a conversation after. So then, as I'm walking down, there's a long walkway down the ministry, weren't they? Like, it's like down to the front doors, yeah? As I walk down the two double doors, I've opened the double doors. As I've opened the double doors, he's hit me, right? And whatever he's hit me with, all I see was a white flash, right? So he's hit me with a white flash. Now, what I remember is looking at his hand and seeing a hatchet.
Right.
Yeah? So I've said, look to the other hands, I can't see nothing. So I said, did you just hit me with that? Right? And he's hit me again, right? So that scar there is where the thing stuck in my head, yeah? So as he's hit me the second time, yeah, I've just pulled my tool out. And I look, see the scar on my finger there?
Yeah.
Right, so I've had a tool, as I've pulled the tool, it was only a two-shot Derringer. I've gone like that, and it's been knocked out of my hand. So with this hand, I've pulled out a blade. I've gone to stab someone with a blade, and then I've been hit with a couple of things. Then I had a can of CS gas. And then that got knocked out of me. And then we're fighting.
You were like fucking Batman, weren't you? Fucking guns, knives, CS gas.
No, that's how we walked about. That was the 90s, man. So I'm having a tear up. Next thing you know, everyone stops fighting. And they're telling me, calm down. You cheeky cunt. Like, you just chopped me with a fucking axe. So he's kicked off and then they've sort of manhandled me. Some's got my arms, some's got my legs, and then they've run me through the nightclub, threw me out the back door, and shut it. So I booted it a couple of times, and then, honestly, this is what happened. I'm outside, I thought, you know what? I can't get these lot nicked, mate. So as I've come out of the little slip, there's a geezer in the motor, so I said, oh, mate. He said, are you all right? I said, oh, do me a favour, drive me over Clerkenwell Road. And he went, yeah, jump in. And he's jumping, he said, what happened? I said, oh, fuck, no, he's them lot in there. I said, you all right, though, mate? He's like, yeah. I said, how's he look? I said, come and get over here. So he said, what are you going to do? I said, oh, I'm going to go back and fucking do the mug, mate. What's the matter with you? He's like, are you joking? I said, are you mad? I said, he's going, mate, fucking fat mug, blah, blah, blah. So he's driving me to Clerkenwell Road. I lived in Radcliffe House at the time. So I've run upstairs, got the keys, come back down to lock up, running. I had a 410 at the time and a little pumpy. So I've got the 410 and a pumpy. And I've come running back out to the car and the geezer in the car had gone. So I thought, fuck. So I've run back upstairs. So I've
got no Ubers then either. You had to probably get a black cab.
No. So I've done. I've gone upstairs. Now I need a driver, innit? So I've woke the bird up, and my missus, Lisa at the time. So I said, Lisa, get up. We need to go and do something, babe. She said, why, what's happening? I said, ah, them lot fucking chopped me in the club. I said, but I've got to go and do the little mug. And she went, what are you on about? And she's got up, and when she's looked at my face, she's just gone, ah! I was like, what are you on about? What are you doing? She said, Marv, your face is wide open, mate. Your head's hanging out. I was like, what? Shut up. And I was, cause to me, it never looked that bad. Like, I'm out of my nut, innit? I just had a little bit of blood. They weren't bleeding. There weren't no blood. It was just an open gash. But it never hurt, right? So she said, no, you got to go to hospital. So I said, all right, sweet. So then we went to the hospital. I got stapled up. Then rest his soul, Junior McDonough. He come back out. He come out with me to find Colton and all them lot. We run on a rampage to the park, dungeons. You never went EC1. You don't ever done EC1. The park, dungeons, and somewhere else we went looking for him. And we couldn't find him. The ministry. So we're going back to the ministry. Ministry every weekend. Just we're going to do him. And that was it.
He obviously heard that he was looking for him. So he
they rung me up. No, because what happened was my pals rung me up. Said, "Mark, what's happening? You need to see me." I said, "For what?" I said, "I'm dealing with something." He said, "I know. I need to speak to you, mate." I was like, "For what?" He said, "This thing with Colin." I said, "Yeah, it's on, mate." He said, "But you need to come and see me." I said, "For what?" I said, "The man's chopped me in my face, bruv." He said, "But Marv, you need to come and see me." I was like, "Is it like that?" He said, "Well, it is, yeah." I was like, "All right, sweet." So I've had to drive to Woodford. So I've drove to Woodford, gone to me pal's ass, and I said, "What?" He said, "What the fuck are you doing trying to rob the ministry?" I was like, "Ch-ch-ch, what do you mean?" He was like, "What do I mean? Why are you robbing it?" He said, "Marv." I said, "Mate, I won't rob no one." I said, "Someone tried to rob my fucking watch, bruv. I stabbed him up. The bouncer tried to hold me up and I stabbed him up. What the fuck?" And then he's got Colton on the phone and then they talk about, "Come and meet me." So I said, "All right, where are you? Where are you?" And I was nuts at that time. "You fucking mugs. You think you're going to frighten me, you fucking squid? Come and see me anywhere you want, mate. Anywhere you fucking want, I'll see you now. Now, now, you fucking mugs. All of you." And then basically, about 6 months later, I got nicked for an armed robbery and then I went away. So that sort of fizzled out. And then I got out when IB, all that kicked off. And then come 2000, I was involved in maybe 7 or 8 shootings over West London. One of my pals got killed. Another kid, I was nicked for shooting some other kid in the block. Another kid got shot, I got nicked for. Another kid got shot, I got nicked for. A couple of people got murdered. And then all of us, there's about a firm of us all got nicked and we went away. 2002. And that was when everything changed again for me after that.
But then when you was in Marbella, you saw him again. Was that 2006?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and what happened then?
Well, 2002. So I goes away in Swellside 2002. I get to, let me tell you this story though, right? Why? Because these are it's all reasons why I come out of the game, right? So I know how much a ton of puff costs, right? I know, because I've been doing it. So when we got nicked for these 19 murders, I've said to the firm I'm working with, "We need a slot on the transport." "What? We need a slot on the transport. There's a couple of $100,000. "We can't do that. We've got to give you drinks." I was like, "What are you on about?" "So we're going to look after you." I said, "What are you looking after us? We're doing 36 years here. How are you going to look after me for 36 years? So I need to pay for my kids, I need to pay for everything." "You can't pay for that. Can't rely on you for that, you fucking mug. Sort it out. Put it on a transport." So I got a message back saying we can't get on a transport, which is the transport for the puff and all that, yeah? Which is going to feed us all while we're in prison. So I thought, "You fucking rat cunt. You dirty rat cunt, yeah? You've got us all in here doing 36 years for you lot to sit out there living your fucking life of opulence, you dirty rat cunt who's been grassing up everyone for I don't know how long. I mean, how could you be the head of an organisation? Not my organisation, my pal's organisation. How would you be the head of it, but yet not get nicked for all the murders? How? It's not possible. Do you get it?" So I hated this little firm. So then basically, when I was away, and I don't know why God kept me alive or why God's got my back, right, but my creator,
he's got a plan for you, my friend.
Then he's got the plan, man. So I said to him, "Look, do me a favour. So get me out of this and I'll never have anything to do with these cunts ever again." And then I'll get these messages. So he just said to me, as long as you don't get involved in killing people and hurting people, I'll get you out within 5 years. So I said, "Yeah?" He said, "Yeah." So I said, "All right, sweet." So I made a plan. When I get out, I'm never going to be in England ever again. I'm going to be in another country doing other things and fuck England. I'm not going to work with none of these people in England. And then, lo and behold, basically the investigation fell apart, the case fell apart, and we got found guilty by association to one of my codependents taking a plea bargain for 5 years. But he got 4 years and I got 5.5 years. I mean, that was guilty by association. And I come out, went straight to Spain, I started my new life. And I hit there over there with a fucking splash. Because the work was cheap, and I knew it. So I give work away cheap to everyone, and all the people that was running it didn't like it. That was the reality. They hated it, that I was exposing the cost of everything to people here. These cunts are taking the piss out of you. They're taking the piss out of you. They're taking the piss out of you. He don't love you, you mug. He's rumming you like a dog. Like, you nick 50 and 60 quids or 100 quids out of you people. You don't nick 700, 800 quid out of them. How? How? It's a fucking liberty, mate. I mean, especially 15, 20 quid. How could you make that out of your mate? Supposed to be your pal, supposed to love you, supposed to help you get out of a piss hole. So I just sort of saw it for what it was. So when I'm over there, I've made a splash. I've come up for a meeting one afternoon. I remember this, I was wild then. Like, I don't have the same feelings about Colton and them lot no more. Colton and that's my mate now, because we actually made up in Spain. So basically, what's happened? I've come out of a meet, come out, and I've walked out. I've gone to my pal, is that Colton? He's gone, are you joking? I said, that's fucking Colton there. He says, shut up. I said, I'm telling you. With that, he's turned round, yeah? And he's gone, Marv, what's happening? What's happening? I was like, what's happening, Colt? He's like, oh, dick eye. And he's come walking over, and I'm thinking, fuck. Was he, like, what's he, this ain't a smiling. In my head, I'm thinking, this ain't a smiling situation, bruv. You chopped me in my head with an axe. Like, what the fuck are you smiling about?
How long ago was that, though? Was that sort of 10 years before, or?
No, right, so that was in 2006, and he chopped me in 1989, 1990, when I was about 19. Yeah, so it was 20-odd years. So I went on a little journey, and I never even bothered going back to look for him, because when I got out, they weren't even around London no more. They was up in Southend, didn't it? So that means I had no way of getting him. I wasn't going to chase him all over the country. It was just when I saw him on site, innit? When we grew up, we weren't about looking for people. If you never had their address, then it was on site. Simple. So we're on site members. I never look for no one. It's on site. If I get his address, I'll turn up. If not, it's on site. And I was always ready for on sites, no matter where we went or what we'd done. And so I've sent him. And he said, yeah, and I was like, what the fuck? What are you up to? But now, think of it like this. I'm plugged in with all the drugs, all the guns, all the sniff and all the puff, with everyone. I'm plugged in like you couldn't imagine in Spain. Like, all the cartel boys, like, they were my mates. I had close relationships, but I never done business with most of them. I've done a little bit of business with the weed, and I never really got into the class A's, it weren't me. But anyway, give me a cuddle. So I said, what the fuck are you doing here? Right, my head's ticking now. Info, I need to know where he is, what he's doing, who he's seeing. Right. Who are you over here? What are you doing? He said, I'm releasing my book. Like, he's just on Cloud Cuckoo. He's in his little bubble. I'm releasing my book, Uprise and Foot Soldier. We're doing it. I said, oh, yeah, what are you doing? He said, Taboo. By the time, Kian had Taboo.
Right.
Yeah, Kian was my pal at the time. So I had to go around to Kian. I said, listen, mate, your club's getting shut tonight, son. It's getting shut. Shut. Done. Finished. He said, what do you want about? I said, mate. I said, I've got, someone's getting ironed out in your club tonight, and it's got to happen. I'm sorry. I said, I love you, I love your family. I said, but this cunt's got to go, mate. He's like, Marv, why? Why? What is it? What's it over? I said, some cunt, Colton. I said, he's an old doorman from London. He said, Colton Leach. I was like, what do you mean? Do you know him? He was like, he's here to see me. I was like, for what? He said, he's doing a book launch in the club. I was like, are you fucking mad? I said, you know he's going, don't you? He went, no, Marv. And he's trying to break shit down to me. I said, mate, I don't give a fuck. He's going, mate. So then we're sitting down talking, and he's trying to break stuff down to me. So what he said to me, he said, I'll tell you what we're doing, Marv. He said, Colton's here. He's doing a bit of graft for me. He said, and there's 25 bar in it, which is 25 mil for the people that don't understand. He said, and we're close. He said, and if you let him launch his book and he does what he does, he said, I'll guarantee you 20% of what we get. So I was like, I can't be bought, mate. I ain't getting bought. You're mad, mate. There's no way in a million years I'm getting bought. But if he's going to chop my head and pay me to walk away, I said, you fucking mad. I said, it ain't on, mate. I speak to him. I said, get your ass in order, because I'm leaving the country tonight, mate. And I've left his ass, yeah? So I'm driving home with the intentions to go into the club tonight on the back door slip in, bam, 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 slip out, and get on a plane and come back to England. That was my plan, yeah? And on the way home, I see 950,000. 1.2 million, 2.4 million. I'm thinking, 4 or 5 mil. I could have that. Do you know what? I think I'll have this. So I've got home. I said, you know what, mate? I ain't being funny. I said, I think I'll have that. When will I have completion? When will I be paid? He said, Marv, I promise you. He said, as it comes in, you get it first, mate. He said, you can get the first couple of bar, mate. I promise you. I said, you sure? He said, yeah, I promise. So I said, all right, sweet. Lovely. So I come and shook hands. Come and shook hands. Sign a contract. Then the next day, I got shot.
Fucking hell.
Oh, but then I went and met Colton. Went and met him after. After I got shot, I went and met Colton. And he said, yeah, sweet. We're on it. And then he started paying. And then I started getting paid. And then Kian had my pants down. Yeah. He had my pants down. And then he had to go on his toes. So I put it on Kian. And then me and Kian fell out for a little while. I had to go to Bristol and put it on a few people in Bristol. Because he disappeared. So I had to go to his money people and I put it on them in Bristol. And then he rang me up out of the blue one day. I said, if you need to see me, you need to come to Morocco. I said, give me the postcode, son. I turned up in Morocco. I said, I want my money, mate. I don't give a fuck. Where's my money? And he said, he's going to get it. He's going to do this. He said, but I need to be in Spain. So as long as I'm getting my money, he come back to Spain, innit? And then he come back to Spain. And then they carried on. And it was that stage of him coming back, me coming back to England, that my kind of epiphany happened with the getting nicked for the murders and then coming out and then thinking, I just can't be bothered with these lot no more. I can't be bothered with crime no more. Do you know what I mean? Because we're just killing.
So when was that? Because you said that you was in Marbella and you met Daniel Kinnan in 2008, you said?
2008, yeah.
So was this at the same time or was this later on?
Well, I met Kian in 2006. So I met Daniel after I got shot.
No.
I met Daniel after I got shot because how me and Daniel became acquainted was, and this is what I mean about love and respect, right? So when I first got shot, I was in so much pain, it was unreal. So much pain, it was unreal. And I got around every day trying to get things put together still. I couldn't stop making money because I was on my own. So I'm out and I'm in excruciating pain. And I'm going in his gaff every day for breakfast, lunch, and meeting people and doing lots of bits and bobs. And then basically one day he just sort of said to me, do you know what, mate? He said, I can't really take your money. I was like, what are you on about? Like, I thought he was trying to tell me I can't come in his gaff, yeah? And he was like, well, I don't really want to take your money anymore. I was like, what do you mean? Well, you don't want me in here? He was like, no. He said, I don't feel right. He said, like, you're going through it now. He said, you've got your family here. He said, and I know things might be tight. He said, so I'd really appreciate it if you could just not sort of pay for anything. I said, I can't do that. He said, well, at least run a bill up until you're back on your feet. So I said, yeah, I don't mind doing that. Because in my head, I thought, I'll run a bill, I'm paying, it's not an issue. So then he just started looking after me, food-wise. He was tired at the beginning. And then basically I got the use of a gym, but I couldn't always get to the gym on my own. So when I was eating in his gaffs, I'd say to him, Dan, do you mind if I took a couple of your staff members to help me out in the gym? Because I needed help getting in and out of the car because I couldn't bend my leg on that. So he'd give me a couple of staff members to help me in the gym. And then it started from there, basically. We started training in the gym, then I got better and better and better and better and better. Then I had the boxing fight, which is on YouTube. And then
how'd you get on?
I battered the keys, yeah. Absolute battered.
Was that your first fight?
First ever.
Was that amateur or pro?
Well, it was a pro. It was on a world title undercard.
Wow.
Sergio Martinez, Manilva Martinez production it was.
I remember seeing that
fight. D Williams was the headline, and the young Irish kid for the world title on Manilva Martinez. No one even knew it was Manilva Martinez because 2 weeks prior to our fight, Matthew Macklin lost to Sergio Martinez. And that's when everyone realised I was on a different platform and I was on a world title platform, mate. Even Daniel done my corner for that night. He did.
Because I think what he built with MTK was amazing.
He's a business mastermind, that man. And he literally is. He literally is a business mastermind because we built that gym. Right, we built that gym, and I can say it, we built that with blood, sweat, tears, and hands, mate. And we got in there and we worked like bitches, we built it and it got flooded. The amount of times it got flooded, but we all stuck at it, man, and we kicked it. And it got turned around and we opened it, and it was a joint effort to get it where it was. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like a community interest company at first. It was like a community, everyone in the community just come together and built the gym, mate.
It became like the super place, didn't it? Because I remember Tyson Fury would train there. You'd have Eubank in there. You'd have Billy Joe Saunders. Like,
everyone,
it was
everyone.
The place, wasn't it?
Every boxing person on the field come to the MTK. Even Frank Warren and all them lot come over there. Do you know what I mean? Like,
MTK was like the super club, wasn't it? It had all the best fighters.
Do you know why? Because it was about the boxers. It's about what I'm doing now. The same simple principle, yeah? I'm reinvesting into the bad kids that I work with. I'm not getting money and living an opulent lifestyle. I get money off the government and give it to the kids to do what they need to do in their music, their football, their boxing, their construction careers. And that's why they benefit. That's why they do well. And that's why they look the bollocks. Because we reinvest into them. And that's what MTK done. They invested into the boxers. They made sure the boxers had the right food, the right training, the right environment, and the right platforms, mate. And the right deals, yeah? The right deals. No one's sucked the life out of boxers. Every boxer that come through MTK got the right instructions. Even a couple of boxers retired very young because they got the right information. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Why? Like, we had a young boxer, the most technically able boxer I've ever been in the ring with. And I'll shit you not. And the only problem is he broke his hands. Young Joe Selkirk. And I'm telling you, I sparred with this kid for a year. And every time I try to win, I used to make him break his hands. Because he had to hit me that hard, he'd break his hand. Because I used to press him that much that the only thing that would stop him is him breaking his hand. And he couldn't do no more. Every time we sparred, apart from one or two, he broke his hand. So, I mean, he was that good. And then he realised he couldn't go on to be a world title holder. He got a European belt.
A lot of people, you know, that do amateur boxing, and that pro game is the hardest game in the world.
Because you've got to be tough. You've got to be tough. And I was going to say, if you've got someone in here now who's solid, yeah, I need them to punch me as hard as they can in my midriff, and you see how solid you've got to be. Like, there ain't no one can win me. And I'll put a 10-1 bet on it that you can't win me with a solid punch. 10-1 odd bet. Tell you, people used to, even Dan used to have a go at me because I was doing it in the club. He said, stop doing it, someone will catch you one. I was like, they won't, man, they won't. It's too solid. I used to let anyone punch me. But yeah, it's another level, mate. So the reason why I am a legitimate businessman on a spiritual journey of selflessness is because of Daniel. Man, wow. Isn't it? And the starting of MTK and what we built and what we've done and how we could develop business models, systems and strategies to help young people.
So when would you say you realised, actually, I don't want to do this crime anymore. I've kind of had enough. I want to
2014.
Wow.
When I got nicked for the Dale Cregan case.
What was that? Because we need to discuss that as well.
Well, basically, I was owed a couple of million quid from a guy. He's dead now, so I won't mention his name. But he was from Bury. He was a big car dealer from Bury.
Do you know what? You sound really good. You actually sound like you're from Bury.
I know.
Bury.
It was from Bury. And our kid. They're like pals in Bury.
Right.
Our kids, Liverpool.
Oh, Manchester.
Manchester and Liverpool's kids, yeah.
But further north, it's pal.
They're bowl. Yeah. But yeah, this fellow, he had me over. He royally had me over for 1.6 bar. I was tiling to him, and he was tiling to me. And basically, he introduced me to a couple of kids from Manchester that were supposed to be heavy hitters. I met them. They weren't dull. The people I met was Dale's older lot. So I met this little...
Was Dale Cregan the guy who... Did he kill a cop or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, the two Fiona...
Was it a hand grenade?
And hand grenade him, yeah. He done the dad and the son, the Schultz.
I thought I knew the name. So yeah, did he go round the house or did they come in his house and he threw a grenade at him?
No, they basically... He done the dad, he done the son, and then the dad said he was going to do him. And then he went and done the dad and hand grenaded the dad and his pal. And then when the police took his kids away from his baby mum to protect them, he rang the police and said, I want my kids back. They said, mate, come on, hand yourself in, do this, do that. He said, if you don't give my son back, I'm going to wire you like that. And they never give me son back. So he rang them up, called them around the house and just shot them.
Fucking hell.
And then blew them up. Absolute scumbag, mate. Like, I didn't know. I knew Dale and I met him a few times. And
was he connected with these guys then?
Yeah, from Manchester, right. Yeah, who I knew. Because one of my mates, who I built a decent relationship with, I won't mention him now because I don't know if he's out of life or he's in it, because me and him don't talk no more. But I can't be sure he's in or out, so I won't mention his name. But I met Dale through him and his mum. His mum ended up getting a 6 on my case. Poor lady.
What was that Dale like? Was he a lunatic?
Well, I met him after he got attacked in Thailand and he got stabbed in the eye. Yeah? So my pal came to me one day and said, mate, one of my pals has been stabbed, he's lost his eye. Can you come and have a word with him? I said, why do you want to have a word with me? He said, because you got one eye. He's getting really down and depressed.
You've got so much in common.
Yeah. So I'm going to expose him. I said, what are you whinging about?
Right.
I said, go and get yourself a couple of moody eyes. Stop fucking moaning, mate. You're a bad man, what? We're going to lose bits. Be happy you ain't lost both of them. And we started communicating for a few weeks and months, getting him in the gym, doing bits and pieces. And I thought he was a lovely kid. I thought he was all right.
Armless. You know what? I want to ask you a personal question, my right? Because for anybody who's watching this that's ever lost a limb or lost an eye, right? For you, it's like, you know, whatever, just fucking go back to work. You know, it's just one of them things. It's like, I mean, is that how you've coped with that? Because that must have been...
I can't remember anything. What's the point? I don't see the point in procrastinating or whinging about something when you can do other things to make it better.
Right.
I was just, when you go through, like, I woke up some days indoors with no food, mate. I never ate for days, not weeks, but days in my house. Like, when you're used to a certain, you don't give up. You know something's gonna turn up. So right. You just don't give up. So no matter what happens to me, I've still gotta feed myself. So I'll ask you a question. If you was in the wild 2 million years ago and you lost your foot, how do you think you're going to survive?
Just ain't got any fucking choice, have you? You just got to get on with
so
it.
So that's the thing. Societies give us choices, free will, and domesticated living.
What was his answer? What was Dale's answer when you said that to him? Did he sort of...
He perked up a little bit.
He thought, actually, you're right.
Yeah, he perked up a little bit. And then started hanging about, doing bits and pieces. I see him a few times. He was in the gym. He was doing sweets and that. And then he just... I don't know, man. Just lost the fucking plot.
Wow.
And like, that's how I see it. Just lost the plot, mate. Lost the plot.
And did you get your money back from our pal in Berry?
He died, didn't he?
Fucking hell.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that I get him... People seem to die around me. And I see...
If they owe you money.
It's mad, though. I fall out of people and they seem to die. And
fall out of Marvin and don't owe him any money.
No, it's not like I die. It just happens and then people just assume it's me, but it's really not.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's really not. It just happens. Like, yeah. And it happens. Even through COVID, three of my enemies from other lives all got ironed out. It's mad, isn't it? But obviously I weren't connected. I can't be connected.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
It does. Watch this. I got shot in 5 places. All my kids had one birthmark everywhere I got shot. But my firstborn has a birthmark everywhere I've been shot. Wow. Imagine that. And that's a fact. Dane, my son, my oldest son, he's got a birthmark on his face here, on his little pecker. Well, it might be a big pecker now. I'm not sure. He's a little pecker. But he's growing well.
And in 2014, you decided, I've had enough.
Well, not really, no. Basically, what happened is I got into the cannabis growing, right? Because in Spain, you're allowed to grow it legally. You was allowed to do things in Spain legally, but you weren't allowed to do in England. So I got into that trade over there a few years ago when it was moving up. And then basically, I used to help a couple of kids out here, giving it to them really cheap so they could get themselves in front. So what they could sell for £3,500, I'd give them for £850 or £1,000, but they got £2,500 in it.
Right.
So they got no reason to owe me money. And a couple of people I'd give, this same fellow I'd give him the Uter, I think I'd give him £15,000 or £18,000 and he could get between 28 and 30. And this little cunt owed me £200,000 when I come out and I thought, how? How? I thought, you horrible little bastard. And I thought, do this little cunt. So I got my mates to go and do him. And then they sent me a message back on my device saying, you know, he's from your manor. So make sure you find out who he is then. And found out, well, you know, he's having it with your son. I said, are you joking? So I've rung my son up. I said, you know, a young fella called blah, blah. He said, yeah, I'll do as that happens. I said, oh, sick. So I've come home. I said, get him, call him for me. He's called him, I want to meet him. I said, what are you playing? He said, oh, I'm all right, I'm saying, yeah. And I said, it's reason I come, let's have a chat, jump in. He's like, what? I said, what? I said, that bit of Reddy's yours, someone. What are you on about? I don't know, no money. He said, yes, you do. It's not done. I said, you do. I said, look, it's getting a bit out of hand and you're going to get yourself into bother. I said, but I'm going to give you an opportunity. He said, what's that? He said, I don't have no money. What are you talking about? I was like, are you winding me up? He was like, yeah. I was like, do me a favor, send me the geezer's handle. Are you sure? Ding, ding. So I've messaged the handle. Ding. Ping, ping. I said, see, answer your thing. And his answer said, it's me. I said, it's me. So you owe me the money. And he's just gone, why? Like, but I said, look, we're going to do one thing. I said, you're going to come off the road with me today, because I'm finished. So if you don't come off the road with me today, then I'm going to give the debt back to the firm. And then someone will likely shoot you or kill you. So he come off, and young G-man. And he did come off. He runs his own church now.
Amazing.
Runs his own church now in North London somewhere. So he went off into the music world, created a little artist called Ambush, who's on the platform now. He's just about to take off once he crosses a couple more T's and dots,
yeah,
a few more I's, and then he's gone clear. But they're all good, man. Everyone's growing. So
when you decided that was it, you wanted to get out of life, what is Marvin Herbert, what are you doing now? What's your thing? It's obviously health, it's obviously fitness, it's obviously helping kids get off the street.
Yeah, but it's a little bit more than that. So I take people to the gym, I give them programs, and anybody that has any skills, I help them to develop business models around their skills, and then I'll add value to their business model, and then I'll take 5% of the company,
right,
to plug them in and let them go. And you know the network is unbelievable, mate.
Yeah.
So I'll create models, I'll take 5% for my add value, and everyone goes off into the sunset and everybody's happy. Yeah. I live on my dividends forever.
Happy days.
Dividends, that's what you've got to get, dividends. Don't get cash, get dividends.
That's a good bit of advice.
Don't get cash, get dividends, mate.
Have you ever thought about writing a book, Marvin?
I'm doing it right now.
I was going to say, because your story, or stories and life, it definitely deserves a book and it definitely deserves a film, I reckon.
Well, I reckon we might be in the right place with the right people to start doing that now.
It's a contract.
Gentleman's answer, you know how we do. And what I'm saying about this thing, right? So all the writing and all that sort of stuff, I'm up for it because amazing. I am the 21st century road to redemption.
Yeah.
And I do believe that I wasted my adult life and all my childhood trying to be the best criminal on the planet. And I amounted to nothing.
Because when you started the conversation, you said, "You're a fucking waste of time. All these people are fucking mugs," and it was as if you had that fucking time travel machine, you'd get back in, and you wouldn't relive that life.
No, it's always, I wouldn't relive that life. And what I would do, yeah, I would get to university. I'd learn 5 foreign languages: right, Arabic, Russian, Chinese, Spanish, and French. They're the 5 languages I would learn fluently, and then I'd get a degree in business and a degree in history, and then I'd go and have a lot of fun. And that's what my ingredients to anybody is now. If you're out there and you're going through school, college, or university, get more knowledge, yeah? Because you will need this knowledge, more knowledge when you're 30, 40, 50, because you won't have done everything you thought you needed to do when you get there. So I'm telling you, 5 foreign languages, business and history, get to university or the highest level qualification you can. When you get to 30, 40, 50, 60, you won't have no fucking financial problems. Facts.
And for anybody that says, that all sounds great, Marvin, but I don't really want to go down that road because I'm not academic.
Again.
People that listen and watch this podcast, we want them to learn something.
Right, learn this. I'm not academic. I can't even fucking read. Yeah? Imagine that. So I can't read properly. I have dyslexia, ADHD, post-traumatic stress.
So you haven't got PTSD. Postnatal depression.
I've said it before. I've got postnatal depression, yeah. PTSD, yeah.
I'm going through the male menopause.
Yeah. And that's it. So look, I'm no good academically. I can't read. My brain can't read information and digest it. I can only be told information and digest it. It's weird. So I can't learn like anybody else. But I've got companies. And asked, was it ask what the computer, what my net worth is. It fluctuates. Sometimes I'm worth a few mil. Sometimes I'm worth a few hundred grand. But it depends on what businesses have crashed. Because when the COVID, I was worth 19 mil before COVID. And I went down to...
I mean, COVID did decimate a lot of businesses.
It ruined all my businesses. Closed all my companies. I went bankrupt. Well, not bankrupt, but my businesses got closed. And I owed 200-300 grand worth of rent in my buildings. They made us shut the building for a year. Yeah, and then my recording studio got shut. My record label got collapsed. And everything fell apart, mate. And I had to move out of my ass because I couldn't pay the mortgage or the rent and all that bollocks. So I had to move out of the ass. I had a nice half a million pound ass, over £500,000 up in Milton Keynes. Four bedroom detached, nice and all that. Do you know what I mean? And I lost it all in COVID. And I hit the bottom, the pavement. And now I'm actually starting from a porter cabin in Kentish Town. And I'm between the porter cabin in Kentish Town and the Bird's House in Leeds. And I commute between both.
And what's your... I mean, how old are you now, Marv?
52.
You're the same age as me.
There you go.
You look better than me, though.
I look better. Yeah. I ain't even had a shave yet.
I reckon it's that alkaline water you've been drinking.
Mate, it's the alkaline diet and the exercise, man. I told you, get in the gym with me, we'll get you down and looking...
Six packed up, you won't recognise me.
I'm telling you what, six months, if you get in the gym with me for 6 months, I can guarantee you now you'll be ripped to fuck. And then ask anybody about coming to the gym with Marv and doing what Marv does with lighter weight. Just ask anyone, even NC.
Where are you training out of?
Well, anywhere there's a Pure. But I go every day. Even the missus, I'll get her to show you her video. She does it, she's got to do it as well. And she does my circuits, but with lighter weights. It's just about doing the exercises, and it's functional exercises. Clean and jerks, you can do them, can't you? That's that one. That's all it is, clean and jerks and squats, that's it. It's not even difficult. They're simple exercises, but it's the way you do it and the pace you do it and who you do it with. Because there's one on the bar, off the bar, on the bar, off the bar. So when I'm working, you're resting. When I've done my set, you've got to do your set. And you both do interval sets and you do five sets and then add weight. Another five sets, add weight. Another five sets, so you add weight five times.
I mean, I'm definitely going to take you up on an offer. Definitely.
Well, we'll have to. We'll be spending too much time with each other.
We're all done. Why are you Marvin hanging out all the time? Getting a six-pack, babe.
By the time we write these books, mate, you have a six-pack. You might even get some air back, mate. Might stress you out that much. So yeah, start scrolling,
mate. I found a six-pack and I'll be done. Like,
got afro after Marv. That's why they call me Marvellous, mate.
and anybody that's watching this that is thinking of getting into crime, what would you say to them?
Mate. What I'll say to you is this, yeah. The shortcuts are only the shortcuts for desperate situations, dramas, trauma, prison and death. The shortcuts don't get you nowhere. The shortcuts just give you a little bit of fun. So if you want a little bit of fun and a life of misery, depredation and sort of skin, brass, prison, nonsense, then don't educate yourself.
Crime could be for you.
It's bad, isn't it? Like if I'd have known now, that I could be like Nick.
Right.
Me and Nick are best mates, right? And the only things is...
Nick Gold, we love you.
Yeah. He's educated, and he's in the right network, in the right framework, in the right environment, and he's golden, mate.
That's why he's called Nick Gold.
Yeah, I'm telling you, and he's golden, mate. And you know what? The house in Belarus, I had number one bedroom.
Right.
My bedroom was number one, right next to the pool. Do you know what I mean? And I live with him in a, I think it's 15, 20 million pound house in St. John's Wood as well.
Sounds terrible.
Unbelievable.
I saw you there. Mm. So I love that big moose he's got.
The moose bar. That's what I've done on my podcast. When I first started, that's where I've done my podcast. Right. In the moose room. So when everybody watches my old podcast when I was in the moose bar, that was in me pal's ass.
And what was actually funny is I was seeing Nick. And I didn't know you two knew each other. And I walked in the Moose Bar and you sat there and you was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, what are you doing here?
It's just faces of old, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like we've all been around the block for too long.
Yeah.
All been around the block for too long. But it's time now for the block to start helping the youngsters
Absolutely. Get
to places we never got to. Because I think in the 80s and the 90s, there was a lot of ego about them. It was all egotistical nuts. but just wanted to own and be and do everything the best. So now we can come together and do things selflessly for the greater good of the next generations. Then we'll be all right, leave our mark, leave our footprint that will last forever.
Yeah.
Rather than all the deadbeat villains that have all died off already.
Right.
Because what successful gangs that really do you hear about, apart from the craze?
Well, yeah, I mean, and even they, I mean, you know, they was in, they died in prison. I mean, you know.
They died in prison. Now the truth's coming out that they were both gay and they raped a few people. There's another little bit of boom that people don't know. Do you know what I mean? Because there's lots of stories about them that people don't know about. And there's lots of things that's going to be coming out in the near future. But life is life.
Yeah. And another thing that happened, which obviously it trended on social media, it was in all the press, with Dave Courtney taking his life.
And, mate, do you know what? Now, I cannot understand. And I'll see him at my son's funeral in May. If that pain that he was going through was enough for him to kill himself, then that's his choice. I would never understand it. At the end of the day, I feel more about his family. But to me, if you kill yourself, you kill yourself for something that you believe you can't live with, you can't live without, or you can't live through. So whatever it is he was going through, I feel you, mate. But I didn't know him, so I can't have any opinion on him as a character. At the end of the day, he must have been going through something traumatic for him to do what he'd done, being such a charismatic individual. He was supposed to be the life and soul of a party. So why would you blow your own candle out?
I was shocked by him. I mean, I've known him for years. I knew him more in the 90s when I was doing the clubs, because he was obviously a permanent fixture on the club scene. And he actually gave me my first break. So when he did his first movie, Hell to Pay, he actually put me in that. So
yeah.
He actually got me started on the...
He's done a lot. I'm not going to try and... I just don't understand why he's done it. He's done a lot, in fairness, because without him, we might even be on these platforms now. I mean, so I do look at things that he's done, and to be quite honest with you, he was the only villainish or... whatever he, I don't know what he was, but he was there first before anyone else.
Well, he was on the door. He was a prolific fighter. He used to do bare-knuckle fights on the old Kent Road. You know, I think it was Ronnie Cray died, and he did the security for that. And obviously that put him right in the public eye. And you know, and then I think what he did after the bottom of that was you'd always see him with Mad Frankie Fraser, Joe Pearl, Roy Shaw, Tony Lambiano, all those sort of old time sort of gangsters. You go to a boxing thing and they'd all be there. Dave would know them. And I think he probably invented the celebrity gangster. So when you actually talk to people, I mean, all the real gangsters and all the people that were in the mob in America, they didn't want to be in the press. They didn't want to be famous. They wanted to be under the radar. But I think he just embraced it and went, you know what? I might have a few quid out of this.
Yeah, and he
was a Marmite character. Some people loved him, some people hated him, but I think the majority of people thought he was funny. A friend of mine who knew him well, he actually said we talked about it the other day, just like we're talking about now, and I said I'm shocked that he would do that, because I only saw him occasionally, like an event or whatever, or a premiere, and he always looked happy. He didn't look miserable. But my mate said to me, he said, you know what? He said he had a reason for doing that and wanting to go out like that. And you just have to respect his choice. It's his choice. He made that choice to do that, if that's what happened. And you just have to go, I might not agree with it, I might not understand it, but that's your choice. So if you're happy with that choice, you just have to let it go.
And in closing, if that's how you want to be remembered, say la vie, yeah, like, I don't want to be remembered like that. I want to be remembered for all the great things I do and all the great people.
All the six packs you've given people, Marv.
And I want to say to people, I'll train people for free, yeah? As long as they come to my gym, I'll train them for free. Yeah? As long as they tell everybody I got them in that shape. That's all I want.
That's the best advice.
Marv done it. Marv and Marv diet. And what I eat and how I eat, because I'm on a 24-hour fast now.
Right.
Every day. every day. So I don't eat after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, well, 3 o'clock in the afternoon tomorrow.
Right.
So I change it every day.
Wow.
I add 1 hour. So tomorrow, I've stopped eating at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and I won't eat until 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So I'll go 25 hours every day. Bang. Bang, until I go all the way around the clock.
What does that do to your body then? Is that a way of kickstarting your metabolism? Or?
It just kills all the bad shit in your body. Your body repairs itself, right? But you've got to make it go without for it to fix itself. We're not supposed to eat so much food. Your body only consumes liquid. So no matter how big you get, it's only liquid that's making it get that big. Imagine that. Your body wrings out all the liquid from the food you eat and absorbs the liquid. Right? So all you've got to focus on is what liquid you put into your body. Now, the reason why people chew is to break down the roots and the vegetables that we're supposed to eat to give us that juice and that nutrient. Do you know what I mean? And that's why we've got teeth the way we've got them. So I'm on a different diet of anything that falls from the ground and grows from the tree. And I have a little bit of vegan donut time. And I'll promote them. I love them. Donut time, vegan donuts. They're the nuts. Oh, November, they've got the blackberry one coming back on circulation, but they've got the biscotti one and the cookie and creams.
I went to Winter Wonderland and I literally saw donut time and I went, what is that? And I went over and I went, oh my God. And I bought like 3 or 4 and I was with the kids and they was all like, oh, these donuts are off the charts, Dad,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so
I'll get them
donut
every week.
Time is where it's at.
I'm telling you, I'll get them every week. I'll show you this is how much I eat them, right? I'm not even joking. Look,
you've got a fucking loyalty card,
haven't
you?
I've got a loyalty card, look. I'm not even joking with you, look. Watch. All the loyalty cards. Look. And they're all
stamped up.
Stamped up loyalty cards, right? I don't mess about, mate. They all know me. Oh, here he is.
Marvin, what time is it? It's donut time.
Yeah,
but Marvin, I've really enjoyed having you on, mate. We've had a great chat, and I think people are going to really enjoy this show because I think you've really opened up, and I think, I don't know, I think people have seen a different side to Marvin Herbert today than they've ever seen on any other podcast. But I will say, your stories are great, and you've got to do the book.
What me and Terry are going to do, yeah? We're going to do the biography. And then we're going to do the artistic license based on a true story. Right? They're the one. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Now, read between the lines, I'll tell you now. Boom.
Marvin, thank you for coming on, mate.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Much appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to the Criminal Connection podcast. Marvellous Marvin Herbert. What a fantastic guest. I want to say thanks to Marvin for coming on. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you look on our YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe, put on notifications, like and comment on every video on our page. And we'll see you next week where we got another exciting guest.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.